Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Thursday, August 10th, 2006. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up in this morning's newscast, British officials say they have arrested 21 people who are alleged to have been plotting to blow up commercial airliners with liquid smuggled onto boards and carry-on luggage. The Bush administration wants to make significant changes to War Crimes Act to protect U.S. soldiers from prosecution. And in the Pacific Northwest, anti-war activists are gathering today in Seattle for the Veterans for Peace. Portland area weather, mostly cloudy, becoming partly sunny in the afternoon. Temperatures 75 to 80. Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows in the 50s.
Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff says 21 people have been arrested in connection with an alleged plot to bomb airliners. America's Homeland Security Chief warns the alleged plot to blow up U.S.-bound planes was getting quite close to being carried out. Michael Chertoff also says it has all the signs of an Al-Qaeda plot. He calls it one of the most sophisticated terror plans to come along in recent years. Chertoff added that it was international in scope and had a lot of people supposedly involved. The FBI director agrees. While British authorities say they've gotten the ringleaders, Chertoff contends there's what he calls, quote, sufficient uncertainty, unquote, about whether they've got everyone allegedly involved. Chertoff says the U.S. is taking precautions even though there's no sign that a direct threat exists. As for the ramped-up security on planes, Chertoff recognizes some of it as inconvenient, but he calls it prudent.
And anti-war activist Cindy Sheehan and best-selling author John Perkins will headline a who's who of peace proponents this week as the National Convention of Veterans for Peace convenes today on the University of Washington campus. At least 500 members of Veterans for Peace are expected to attend, said William Schmidt, a Korean War veteran and the organization's local spokesman. The anti-war group was begun in 1985 by four U.S. veterans of various wars concerned about Americans' use of its volunteer fighting forces. The convention runs through Sunday when its activities include veterans taking a bus to the Peace Arch in Blaine to meet U.S. war resistors from other conflicts who now live in Canada. On Saturday night, the convention is slated to hear from more speakers, including Army First Lieutenant Aaron Watada, who is facing charges for refusing to deploy to Iraq. He calls the U.S.-led war in Iraq illegal. This from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer.
A Salem Naval non-commissioned officer has been arrested by federal authorities on suspicion of espionage. Petty Officer Ariel Weinman is being held at the naval brig in Norfolk, Virginia, for passing secret and confidential information to representatives of a foreign government. If found guilty, the 2003 West Salem High School grad could face life in prison. Weinman's father, Rob, told KGW that Ariel was, quote, gung-ho, unquote, about the Navy at first, but became disillusioned with his mission in July of last year and deserted. Rob Weinman and his wife, Melinda, attempted to persuade Ariel to return to the Navy. 8 months after Ariel deserted while on leave in Bahrain, FBI investigators showed up at the family's home and searched the house for a missing laptop. The laptop apparently contained confidential information Ariel Weinman had access to while he served as a fire control officer on the USS Albuquerque, a top-secret submarine that fires missiles. Investigators say Ariel Weinman stole the laptop when he deserted the Navy. Federal investigators say Weinman passed along information to a representative of Russia while he was on leave in Bahrain. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
And also from the Salem Statesman Journal, Oregon has dramatically improved its accuracy in food stamp payments. For the first time in a decade, Oregon's accuracy rate was better than the national average. That means the state won't have to pay millions of dollars in penalties for not meeting standards set by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which oversees the National Food Stamp Program. Oregon's payment error rate was 5.71% in 2005, down from 7.86% in 2004 and from 13% in 2003. The department's accomplishments means that the benefits are going to people who truly need them. In Oregon, more than 400,000 people receive $39 million in food stamps each month.
Oregon's student achievement test may send false signals that elementary school students are on track, but the academic wheels fall off in middle school. Experts say that's because the state's standardized tests are relatively easy for elementary students to pass, and national studies suggest that the middle school tests are relatively more difficult. The disparity has some big consequences. For one, meeting standards in elementary school may be an unreliable milepost for students and parents, indicating that students are prepared to meet them in middle school. The problem for middle schools, federal No Child Left Behind ratings are pegged primarily to the state's tests. That's why more than 100 Oregon middle schools were rated federal troubled schools last week. Only 1% of Oregon's elementary schools made the list. More than 80% of Oregon's third and fifth graders met state standards in reading and maths in 2004 and 2005. As in the years past, the results dropped to the mid or to low 60th percentile in eighth grade. That decline seems to make sense, squaring with many grown-ups often less than tender memories of middle school. This from the Oregonian.
And the number of temperature record broken in western Oregon during last month's heat wave was truly remarkable. From Portland to Medford, four locations tied or broke their all-time records for high minimum temperatures. The highest temperature was recorded in western Oregon during the recent heat wave and was 108.8 degrees in Hillsborough on July 21st. This from the Oregonian.
Underwater video cameras remotely operated from a research vessel sent back images of reefs off the Oregon coast, barren of fish but littered with what researchers estimated as thousands of carcasses of decaying crabs. Worms, normally dug into the sea sand, drifted dead along the bottom. Francis Chan, an Oregon State University marine ecologist, said, "It's just a wasteland down there." These crabs and worms died because they proved too slow to move away from an extraordinary swath of oxygen-depleted water. Oxygen-poor water now stretches along 70 miles off the Oregon coast. Water also has been detected off the coast of Washington's Olympic Peninsula. This year's dead zone does appear to be more intense in some areas. Monday's reading off Cape Perpetua was so radical a measurement that Chan didn't believe what he found until he double-checked the measurement back at his laboratory later that evening. This from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer.
The Bush administration has drafted amendments to a war crimes law that could eliminate the risk of prosecution for political appointees, CIA officers, and former military personnel for humiliating or degrading war prisoners. Officials say the amendments would alter a U.S. law passed in the mid-1990s that criminalized violations of the Geneva Conventions. The conventions generally bar the cruel, humiliating, and degrading treatment of wartime prisoners. The draft U.S. amendments to the War Crimes Act would narrow the scope of potential criminal prosecutions to 10 specific categories of illegal acts against detainees during a war, including torture, murder, rape, and hostage taking. Left off the list would be what the Geneva Conventions refer to as outrages upon the personal dignity of a prisoner and deliberately humiliating acts, such as forced nakedness, use of dog leashes, and wearing of women's underwear seen at the U.S.-run Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, that fall short of torture. The official said people have gotten worried, thinking that it's quite likely they might be under a microscope. Foreigners are using accusations of unlawful U.S. behavior as a way to rein in American power, and the amendments are partly meant to fend this off. This from the Washington Post.
The Bush administration yesterday awarded temporary housing contracts worth up to $1.5 billion for future hurricane disasters, including four to companies that previously received no-bid contracts for Katrina work. Four of the six contracts awarded will go to Shore Environmental and Infrastructure, Bechtel National, CH2M Hill, and Floor Enterprises, which received similar contracts but without competition after Hurricane Katrina last fall. All six contracts were awarded following a competitive bidding process. The six were chosen as winners out of 13 proposals based on the quality of plans, price, and resource capacity. Some of the companies have strong political and government ties, and Homeland Security Inspector General Richard Skinner has been reviewing the propriety of the contracts with a report expected in October. The Shaw Group's lobbyist, Joe Alba is a former FEMA director and is a friend of President Bush, while Bechtel CEO Riley Bechtel served on Bush's Export Council from 2003 to 2004. And CH2M Hill and Fluor Corporation have done extensive previous work for this administration. The companies have denied that connections played a factor.
And more than 11 months after Hurricane Katrina, Louisiana's Road Home Housing Aid Program for victims of Katrina and Hurricane Rita has yet to be come through with the money for Watts or the roughly 100,000 others who have applied. The first anniversary of Katrina at the end of August could come and go before they see the first dime, and it could be more than 2 years before the last of the money is handed out. Designed by the state and funded by the federal government, the $7.5 billion Road Home will be one of the largest redevelopment programs in U.S. history. Road Home will provide grants of up to $150,000 per homeowner to buy them out or help them repair or rebuild. It is for Louisiana residents with extensive home damage, and the idea is to make homeowners whole again by giving them as close as possible to what they had before the storm. But the bulk of the federal funding was not approved until almost 10 months after Katrina, caught up in disputes over the cost of Iraq War and other spending, and the program had to run a gauntlet of additional state and federal approvals.
Top Democrats on Capitol Hill abandoned Senator Joe Lieberman one by one yesterday and threw their support to Ned Lamont, the anti-war challenger who defeated Lieberman in the primary. John Kerry and Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts, Harry Reid of Nevada, Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey, and Chuck Schumer of New York said they supported Lamont as the duly elected choice of Connecticut's Democratic voters. Kennedy called Lamont's victory a clarion call for change, and a spokeswoman said Kennedy planned to campaign for the nominee. Lamont raised no public complaint about Lieberman's plan to run as an independent and predicted he would win in November, even with Lieberman on the ballot. Lieberman showed no signs of backing down, even though the Democrats' withdrawal of support also means he will be starved for money from party sources to again take on the millionaire Lamont. Lieberman said he fired his campaign manager and spokesman and asked for the resignations of his campaign staff. Republicans seized on the results to paint Democrats as careless with the country's security.
And an ex-CIA contractor on trial for allegedly beating an Afghan detainee had enthusiastically volunteered to interrogate the man about rocket attacks on a remote base housing U.S. and Afghan troops. David Pissarro is charged with beating Abdul Wali during 2 days of questionings in June of 2003 at the base in Assadabad, Afghanistan. He is the first American civilian charged with mistreating a detainee during the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The CIA officer, who said he was in charge of the CIA operations at Assadabad, testified in disguise and using a pseudonym, Steve Jones. He said Pissarro asked to take over Wali's questioning after an initial interrogation produced no information, and that he allowed Pissarro to continue his questions until learning Wali was not doing well. He was down in the cell and he was groaning. Wally died later that day, according to Jones. Pissarro said he had knocked the prisoner down once during his 2 days of questioning and that Wally had been caught with a makeshift key trying to open his shackles.
Three Egyptian students who were being sought for failing to turn up for an exchange program at Montana State University were taken into custody yesterday, more than a week after they arrived in the United States. One student was arrested in Minnesota, and two others surrendered to authorities in New Jersey. They were among 11 students being sought by law enforcement after they failed to attend a month-long program on English language and U.S. history and culture in Bozeman, Montana. Eight students remain at large. Montana State repeatedly tried to contact the missing students. When that failed, the school notified Homeland Security officials and registered the Egyptians as no-shows in the system. The government tightened the student visa process after the 9/11 attacks. One of the hijackers involved in the attacks had arrived in the U.S. with a student visa, and immigration officials approved student visas for two other hijackers after they entered the country. A fourth attended flight training school without student visas.
U.S. authorities have charged three former bosses at voicemail software firm Comverse with fraud over the alleged manipulation of stock options. The Security and Exchange Commission and Justice Department issued civil and criminal charges against the trio. More than 80 companies, including Apple Computer, have said they are either investigating their own option scheme or are being probed by the government. The inquiries relate to the backdating of stock options to boost their value. Stock options are part of a many senior executive salary packages and were a popular way of attracting and retaining employees at technology firms during the dot-com boom period of the late 1990s and early 2000s. Although it is not illegal to backdate options, federal prosecutors have said they will prosecute if the backdated options were not properly accounted for. This from the BBC.
21 penguins were rescued on a hot East Texas highway yesterday after a truck carrying the wildlife to a temporary home south of Houston overturned. 4 penguins and some exotic fish were killed in the accident, including 3 penguins that were hit by passing motorists. Texas Public Safety Trooper Richard Buchanan said, quote, "The rest of the penguins kind of stayed together in the ditch," unquote. The truck was also carrying an octopus. The octopus was uninjured. Trooper Buchanan said, "There was another truck full of snakes and alligators that was an hour ahead of them, so luckily we didn't have to deal with the alligators." This, according to Reuters.
The Independent Institute Ivan Ilan said that the 9/11 Commission watered down references to the U.S. support for Israel in explaining Osama bin Laden's motivation for attacking the United States. In their new book, former Governor Tom Keene and former Congressman Lee Hamilton, chairman of the 9/11 Commission, admit that the Commission whitewashed the root cause of the 9/11 attacks, namely America's interventionist foreign policy. Keene and Hamilton's book, Without Precedent, The Inside Story of the 9/11 Commission, is an inside account of the panel's work. The book details the administration's willful misrepresentation of its incompetent actions that day. And it makes the shocking admission that some commission members deliberately wanted to distort an even more important issue. Apparently, unidentified commissioners wanted to cover up the fact that U.S. support for Israel was one of the motivating factors behind al-Qaeda's 9/11 attack.
Deaths from sectarian strife in Baghdad are reaching unprecedented levels, with the Central Morgue yesterday reporting a sharp rise in the number of corpses it received during July. Officials said about 60 a day passed through its doors last month. Of those, 90% were reported to have suffered violent deaths. The figure is the highest monthly toll since February, when an attack on the Shia shrine in Samarra by suspected al-Qaeda militants unleashed a wave of tit-for-tat killings between Baghdad's Shia and Sunni communities. About 6,000 extra Iraqi forces and 3,500 U.S. soldiers redeployed from the north have embarked on a crackdown in the Baghdad area aimed at halting the activities of insurgents, death squads, militias, and criminal gangs. The new security initiative has already run into political trouble following strong criticisms by the Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki of an American-led raid in the Shia stronghold of Sadr City on Monday. The violence shows no sign of abating. Insurgents' attacks across the country are averaging about 90 a day. Kidnappings about 30 to 40 a day. This from The Guardian.
And also from The Guardian, Israel dramatically raised the stakes in the Middle East yesterday, approving an invasion of southern Lebanon involving tens of thousands of troops. At the same time, the army commander in charge of the Lebanese offensive was replaced by another general with a more aggressive reputation, a reflection of Israeli impatience about military progress. The decision by the 12-strong security cabinet left the door open to last-ditch diplomacy at the UN Security Council, but the diplomats were only given a few days to produce an acceptable compromise. That seemed as far away as ever yesterday, as the U.S. and France clashed openly over a ceasefire plan that is opposed by Lebanon and other Arab states. Last night, Tony Blair and George Bush discussed proposing a small, rapidly deployable UN force to help the Lebanese army re-enter the border zone. But Israel wants the Security Council to enforce a UN resolution disarming Hezbollah and extending the authority of the Lebanese army to the southern border. Lebanon wants an immediate Israeli withdrawal. As U.S. and French teams in New York tried to draft a fresh UN resolution, French President Jacques Chirac blamed the Americans for delaying an agreement.
Lebanon now faces an expanded Israeli ground invasion that could last more than a month after the Israeli Security Cabinet yesterday backed plans to put forward by the Defense Minister, Amir Peretz. The decision came as the leader of Hezbollah rejected the U.S. and French draft ceasefire plan as unfair and unjust. The plan has been the subject of an intense political battle within the Israeli government for more than a week, and the vote in support of it throws doubt on attempts to agree to a U.N. resolution ending the conflict. This according to The Guardian.
Walmart Stores Incorporated has asked to meet with China's state-sanctioned labor group after employees form unions at five stores in the campaign to unionize all of its 60 Chinese outlets. The request for talks with the All China Federation of the Trade Unions, or ACFTU, was Walmart's first public step in response to the union votes over the past 2 weeks. Li Jianming, an ACFTU spokesman, said no date has been set for a meeting. He declined to say what Walmart asked to discuss. The ACFTU warned Walmart not to retaliate against workers who form unions. The ACFTU is the umbrella group for unions permitted by the communist government, and it has lobbied for the creation of Walmart unions and had accused the company of blocking its efforts. Xinhua said a letter from the Walmart to the ACFTU requesting talks asked for them to take place with no media presence. China doesn't allow independent unions, and activists are frequently jailed and harassed. The ACFTU often is regarded not as an advocate for better pay and working conditions for employees, but as an intermediary that represents employers to workers.
More news from China. China is auctioning off licenses to foreigners to hunt wild animals, including endangered species. The government would auction licenses based on types and numbers of wild animals, ranging from about $200 for a wolf, the only carnivore on the list, to as much as $40,000 for a yak, according to Reuters. The auction, taking place on Sunday in Chengdu, capital of the province of Sichuan, would be the first of its kind in Chinese history. The report made no mention of the endangered giant panda, some 1,500 of which survive in nature reserves in southwestern China. Hunting of animals is popular with Chinese, who like to eat exotic meats or use animal parts and medicines for their perceived aphrodisiac or medicinal properties. But the hunting licenses would be available only to foreigners, given China's strict rules on gun control. Proceeds from the auction would be used for wild animal protection. This according to Reuters.
And in Nepal, community radio stations are at the forefront of revolution, turning the airways into an educational medium for constitutional reforms. Nearly 4 months after successfully pushing the fight against royal dictatorship, several stations in the capital of Kathmandu and outlying areas have been broadcasting programs aimed at raising awareness about constitutional issues. Station managers say the aim is to positively influence the constitution-making process for an inclusive and democratic Nepal. Harry Spokota, station manager of the VJFM, said, "We are doing what we can with the resources we have. We are finding that many listeners want to participate in these programs and air their personal views on what the Constitution should be like. Today in Nepal, the media, particularly community radio and print, are at the forefront of this debate for a new constitution, bringing in a myriad of voices from all political shades. But the most striking fact is that many of these voices are from the grassroots, local citizens in small towns and villages who want to have their say." Antenna Foundation, a production and clearinghouse for public issues-based radio programs, is currently preparing such a program to raise awareness about constitutional issues. That would not have been possible without donor support. The debate is still largely confined to community radio, since most private commercial stations remain focused on entertainment-based programs, where the real money is. This underscores a peculiar quirk in Nepal's radio movement. Stations with the financial muscle remain aloof from educational programs, where the ones that seek to push awareness barriers lack funds. This from the Interpress service.
Sound like a familiar situation? In Mexico yesterday, electoral officials fanned out across the country to begin a partial recount of the tight presidential election. And populists are alleging vote fraud, blocked bank headquarters in the capital, and vowed to take their disruptive protests nationwide. The count must wrap up by Sunday, after which the Federal Electoral Tribunal will review the results and decide by September 6th whether to declare a president-elect or annul the election. The initial results gave Felipe Calderon, the pro-business candidate of Conservative President Vicente Fox's National Action Party, a lead of 240,000 votes, or less than 1%, over leftist candidate Andrés Manuel López Obrador, former mayor of Mexico City. The partial count could change the results, but it was considered unlikely to tip the balance in favor of López Obrador, whose supporters have been disrupting life in the capital for more than a week to press their charge that he was robbed of an election victory by fraud.
And yesterday, thousands of South African women who marked the 50th anniversary of the historic anti-apartheid march by reenacting it received a far warmer reception at South Africa's administrative headquarters than given in 1956. The original march was staged to protest against past laws, which separated families and restricted the movement of black people. Then the union buildings were the citadel of Afrikaner rule, and J.G. Strijdom, arguably the most vicious of apartheid rulers, was in power. Yesterday it was Thabo Mbeki who received the marchers, telling them, "Together as a nation, we must uphold the perspective that none of us is free unless the women of our country are free, free from racial and gender discrimination, free from poverty, free from fear and violence." The president has increased the participation of women in his government. His deputy president is a woman, as are 12 of his 28 ministers. But Mr. Mbeki and other speakers emphasize that even though apartheid is history, South African women had to continue their struggle against poverty, AIDS, and the world's highest rates of rape, domestic violence, and murder against females. This from The Guardian.
Federal investigators said yesterday that FBI agents were justified in shooting to death a Puerto Rican militant in a September 2005 raid. The report was dismissed by pro-independence activists as a cover-up. Filiberto Ojeda Rios shot at agents as they came to arrest him at his rural home in western Puerto Rico, justifying their return fire. That's what the U.S. Department of Justice Office of the Inspector General concluded in a 237-page report. Ojeda shot and seriously wounded one of the agents during the raid, but investigators concluded that the FBI should have anticipated a shootout and attempted to force Ojeda, who had been a fugitive for 15 years, to surrender. Ojeda was the leader of a militant group that claimed responsibility for bombings and attacks in the 1970s and 80s aimed at gaining independence for Puerto Rico from the United States. In one of the attacks, gunmen opened fire in 1979 on a bus carrying U.S. sailors, killing 2 and wounding 10. The report contradicted claims by Ojeda's widow, Elma Beatriz Rosado, that the FBI agents opened fire first during the raid. But, she said, they may have been confused by the agent's use of a non-lethal flashbang outside the house. This has been the KBOO Morning News for Thursday, August 10th, 2006. Thanks for listening. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Our engineer is Steve. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Brian Smith.
We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on Translator K264AA, in Hood River at 91.9 FM on Translator K220HR. Portland area weather, mostly cloudy, becoming partly sunny in the afternoon. Temperatures 75 to 80 tonight, mostly cloudy, lows in the 50s. If you would like to volunteer in the AM newsroom, please call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202.